Commercial Smelt Fishery Update. This is a briefing. Hey, welcome, sir.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. For the record, my name is Dr. Dave Lowry, and I'm a senior research scientist with the Puget Sound Marine Fish Science Unit. I oversee our marine fish and forage fish management and research projects. So today I'm going to start with some background and make sure that we're all on the same page and that everybody's got some idea what we do with smelt in Puget Sound. And then I'll go into a substantial amount of detail about what we've done the last couple of years since we made some fairly large fisheries changes. So briefly, what I'll cover is some policies and generally our management schema, a little about the ecology of forage fish in general and smelt in particular, and then I'll talk about what the fisheries were prior to 2014 and then after the 2014 change, which is really what I'm here to kind of cover, like I said, the meat of. Then I'll summarize the 2014 and 15 harvest and then talk briefly about what we plan to do moving forward. So in 1998, the Commission developed a policy, C-3012, that specifically dealt with the management of forage fish resources. And a couple of primary tenets of that policy are, one, that maintaining healthy populations of forage fish is really the key to this policy. And that was both to recognize that these fish are utilized by commercial and recreational fisheries, as well as a really important component of the ecosystem. They're used as forage by marine mammals, marine birds and seabirds, terrestrial animals of all sorts when they're in the near shore. Another major tenet of this policy was that if data are limiting to be able to manage any of these resources, any of these specific species, that we would take a conservative approach to their management. And specifically, again, relating back to kind of this mix of both ecological and fisheries role, we said that achieving maximum yield fishing on any of these species would not be a goal. So maximizing and really trying to take as much as we could out of the system, in a sustainable way even, would not be a goal for these fisheries. Forage fish have been recognized by others than just the department as key components of the ecosystem in Puget Sound. Specifically, the Puget Sound Partnership has an indicator for forage fish health in the sound. They use herring because that's the species that we have the most data about, but that's a stand-in for all species of forage fish. And as I mentioned, we've got research from a variety of different places showing just how critical these forage fish are to the ecosystem. They're a major component of the diet of seabirds, various fish species, many of which are ESA listed or populations that are experiencing crashes in different areas, and marine mammals and other things also feed on them, in addition to human beings. So surf smelt are the species that we're here to talk about today, specifically commercial fishery, but there's also a recreational fishery for surf smelt in Puget Sound. As I said again, they're a source of food for diverse critters, and specifically they serve as a conduit between plankton and the upper food levels, which is a really critical role that they play. Recreational fishers use both dip nets and jig gear, and there's a year-round season. It's closed in Hood Canal, and it's closed on Wednesdays and Thursdays for dip netting. Jig gear can be used year-round. There is no license requirement for any smelt fishing in Washington State. But there is a limit of 10 pounds per person per day, and the overall harvest of this fishery in Puget Sound is not known. We've had a couple of estimates for localized areas. In 1991 and 92, we did an estimate for Ross Point and Sinclair Inlet. In 2012 and 13, we did estimates on the north end of Kamano Island, which we'll talk about in more detail in just a minute here. But overall, we don't know the recreational harvest in Puget Sound. And that comes from a couple of different things. Like I said, no license requirement makes that exceptionally tricky. It's also a fishery that, because these fish spawn year-round in different locations, it's really hard to figure out where these hotspots of fishery effort might be. And we simply haven't had the resources or the personnel to be able to put into that over the last several years. Notably in 2014, and this is just the one change that occurred for the recreational fishery, we also put into place a nighttime closure. So no fishing from 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. That previously was not the case. So for the commercial fishery, prior to 2014, drag nets or beach seines were the sole capture method being used. Purse seines and dip bag nets were also open, but there were no fishermen using this technique or these techniques. It was an open access fishery and still is, so there's no limit on licenses. However, during any given year, we generally have between 6 and 7 active licenses. We have one license holder that holds multiple licenses, so sometimes he'll land on one as opposed to the other, or he'll land on both. So we usually have either 6 or 7 active licenses. The commercial seasons vary throughout Puget Sound. And essentially, there's some color coding here that you can see. The green areas are open year-round, and all of the other areas are closed to one degree or another. The closure periods in any given geographic area are specifically based on trying to protect the early spawning period for these for surf smelt. In some areas, specifically in the southern sound, they're known to spawn more in the winter. In the northern sound, they're known to spawn more in the summer, but they actually spawn year-round in all of these areas. That peak spawning period, though, is what they were trying to protect with these seasonal closures. The other thing that these seasonal closures do is they provide exclusive recreational fisheries opportunities in the summer. So after April 15th, all areas shut down, and that allows for recreational fisheries just in the summer. Hood Canal is closed year-round. This is linked with the low dissolved oxygen issues that we've briefed the commission several times about and that have been ongoing for better than a decade now. The commercial fishery was also closed Friday and Saturday in all areas, even where it was open. And again, this allowed for some overlap between recreational and commercial fisheries, but not necessarily overlap on the water at the same time. There's a little circle here that I've drawn with this animation that I'd like to draw your attention to. This is the northern portion of Kameno Island. It's that little red loop there. And specifically, that's areas 24A and 24C. And so I'll come back to that in just a minute here. So again, prior to 2014, we briefed the commission on this in 2014, and there was several changes to the fisheries regulations made. But in the 1970s and 80s, the average landings for commercial smelt in Puget Sound was about 60,000, just under 60,000 pounds. That changed quite a bit in the 90s and 2000s, and in fact, it increased about 74% in the 90s and 2000s. And the point that I'll make here specifically is that from 95 or 6 forward, you can see the proportional component that 24A and C contribute to the fishery. That's that northern area of Kameno Island, which is where now nearly all of the harvest comes from. In any given year, that area is 85 to 90% of the harvest, and in a couple of years, it's been as high as 96% of the overall harvest in the sound. So in 2014, several changes went into place. Specifically, we closed the commercial fishery on Sundays, so it's now a Monday through Thursday fishery, closing Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to allow more opportunity for recreational fishing. We also implemented the same night closure that I mentioned for the recreational fishery, so a 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. night closure. Partially, this was to protect the fish, which tend to spawn at high tides and also tend to spawn under cover of darkness or when there's rain or any number of other things that make them feel a little more secure in the nearshore. When they come into spawn, they're spawning in very shallow water. And so most people who fish them will tell you, if you go out on a sunny day with no ripple on the water, you're not going to catch a fish. They see you coming, they'll move away from you. So this nighttime closure was put into place partially to make sure that they had these nighttime tides to spawn on, which they generally prefer. We also closed the inactive commercial gear types that I mentioned, the purse seine and the dip bag net. And most substantially, we put into place a harvest quota at the direction of the commission of 60,000 pounds. So this does two things. It brings the maximum harvest, the maximum available harvest to the commercial fishermen back closer to the 1970s or 80s level. But it also requires active in-season management. We had never had a quota before, and so even when the commercial fishery was taking about 100,000 pounds, that was market limited. They were taking as much as they could, but they really couldn't sell much more than about 100,000 pounds, given that there were 6 or 7 active licenses. Without that need for monitoring, we previously didn't do in-season management. We essentially would allow them to fish, and at the end of the season, we would just tally up the total catch. With this 60,000-pound quota, we then had to be more proactive about in-season management, and so we enacted quick reporting. So a couple of things that I'll note here. This graph gets awfully busy, and the version that you've got on your map or your handouts includes all of the animations overlaid. But the first thing that I'll point out is, despite the fact that we have year-round openings in a variety of areas in Puget Sound, there has not been any fishing until the end of April in any year for the last 8 years. So really, this does not occur. The guys don't really get up and fishing until spring or into the early summer. Additionally, less than 3% of the annual harvest in any given year for the last 12 years has been taken by the end of June. So again, essentially, even though you could fish the entire year, January through December, no fishing really occurs. They don't really get going until the summertime, June. Yes.
I mean, it seems logical they don't start fishing until April, because on the north end of Camino Island, that's when they come in to spawn, and that's where they take 88 to 95% of their harvest. So
right.
Why would they want to go fish an area that has very little abundance when they can go there and hit the mother load?
Yep.
It's kind of, I see that as an issue.
Yeah, and that definitely coincides here. If you look back to the 1970s and 80s, the time frame in which they fished was a little more variable. Many of the fishers that we still have in the fishery right now were fishing at that time, and they'll tell you that was a couple of different things. It was Hood Canal being open to them, and they were fishing Hood Canal as opposed to North Camino. They were also scouting more, trying to find abundances of smelt. But yeah, since the early 90s, about 93, 94, when they moved to North Camino Island, that's definitely an influence here. They're targeting those fish.
Since the Hood Canal area has been closed, what has the population of sur smelt done in Hood Canal, or do we know?
So the unfortunate thing is surf smelt are really hard to do a population abundance on, because, and we've discussed this with the commission a couple of times, but they're broadly distributed. They come in near shore during different times of year in different locations. They tend to school. So when you collect data, you get lots and lots of zeros followed by a huge number. And mathematically, that's hard to deal with unless you have a fairly intensive survey effort. This past year, we were actually funded by the legislature to specifically do some midwater trawling for these fish. And we're gearing up right now. We're actively in the process of hiring. We've got a boat committed to that effort. We'll start that fishing in February of this coming year.
A scientific question. It's not related to your presentation. In California, they have a fish that looks identical to these. It comes up on the beaches in high water. And grunion, they ground themselves, and it's really something to watch people. Are they similar or a different fish?
So there's several different species that spawn in the near shore in California. They do have surf smelt, same species we have up here. They also have night smelt, which we also have in Puget Sound, but in much lower abundance. We have some on the outer coast, on the Washington coast, Claylock area, and those spots are good places to fish for night smelt. The grunion are actually a silverside. So they're not related, but they're doing very similar things.
Okay. All
so, right. Yeah, ecologically similar, but.
Thank you.
Yes.
So just to understand a little bit about doing a census, are the populations discrete in the different areas, or do they move around throughout the entire area?
So this is something we've been wrestling with for the last several years. We've got information, genetic information, that we've collected a couple of different ways in a couple of different designs over the last 4 years here. And what we've been finding repeatedly is no population structure. And oddly enough, that's collecting fish all the way from southern British Columbia, out the Strait of Juan de Fuca, down into South Puget Sound. There's apparently a linkage, enough linkage genetically, and enough exchange between populations that they're not differentiating. We just recently ran one more round of surveys, genetic surveys, looking at a couple of very temporally discrete populations where they're very different times of year that they're spawning, with the thought that maybe it's the same group of fish moving around. And oddly enough, in that one, we started to find some structure, something that hinted at maybe some structure. So we're still actively pursuing this topic. We do know that when we tag fish, they don't move far from home. Mm-hmm. And we've actually got a spot over in Eld Inlet, right next to Olympia here, where we've been tagging surf smelt for just over 18 months now. And we've got individuals that we've recaptured in the same place month after month. Mm-hmm. We've also got individuals that have been caught up to 9 months apart. So we're finding they seem to stay in the same area. We're not sure how representative that is. There's a USGS, United States Geological Survey. They're doing a survey up in St. Clair Inlet with acoustic tagging of these fish. And again, they found some localized movement, but the fish tend to hang around in the same vicinity. We're not seeing that genetically, and we think that that's because the movement actually occurs when they're larvae as opposed to when they're adult. So when the eggs spawn, when they incubate on the beach and then the larvae are washed away, they're essentially at the mercy of the currents. So they would be moving and shifting and distributing until they settle out. And then once they settle out, it appears that they don't move around all that much.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, so again, this is generally a summer fishery is what we're seeing, at least the past several years, just over a decade. And a couple of things that I'll note here. I'm showing calendar year 2013 in the blue series here. That's just for reference. 2013 was a fairly standard year with regard to the amount caught and kind of the curve of distribution of catch over the course of the season. So that's up here as kind of a representative comparison point for 2014 and 15. And the things that I'll draw your attention to are, one, that in all 3 years, and again, kind of prior to these regulations going in place and then the regulations in place for 14 and 15, the week of the year in which 50% of the harvest was taken didn't change. So essentially, they're ramping up at about the same time. They're taking about half the catch by that second or third week in August. In 2014, with this cap in place and with the quick reporting monitoring them, they took 61,209 pounds, which was just over the harvest quota, but they took that by October 10th. So if you look at that by comparison to 2013, you can see that the cap was reached in the second week of October, and so they didn't fish those last few years. Which is fully what we anticipated, that they would reach that cap prior to hitting these goals that they had hit in past years. In 2015, that trend was a little more pronounced. Again, now being the second year of the quick reporting and the fishermen being on board with it and being timely with their reports and everything, we barely exceeded the 60,000. We came in at 100.4% of our quota, but it cut off earlier, so in September. So quick reporting, there's a phone number that the fishermen are required to call the day after they've landed catch. So they have until 10 o'clock the day after they've landed catch to report that to us. And the reason for that is that the fish tickets that when they sell the fish to a commercial fish buyer or to themselves, those tickets actually take up to a week or more to get into our system sometimes. They have to be mailed hard copy to Olympia. Right. They go through the entry process. So this is a better in-season management tool. And we can really track what's going on to the day.
Great.
So what I'll note here is we were close to our quota in both years, slightly exceeding it in the first year, but coming in right around the 60,000-pound mark. And the fishery has been curtailed on the tail end just a bit. So evaluating what we've done so far, we would say that the harvest quota has been successfully implemented, again, slightly over in both years, but right at the 60,000-pound mark. The quick reporting is working well. So ultimately, when all of the final tickets are actually tallied up, both years we've been less than 1% of deviation from what we thought was landed based on the quick reports versus what was actually reported as landed with the hard copy fish tickets. And in both cases, these were somebody forgetting to land or forgetting to call in a ticket or calling in a ticket several days late that we didn't get into our system until later. So generally, the quick reporting is working as well as or better than the fish tickets. The 50% harvest date is the same as I showed in that last figure, but we've had early closures in both years. And again, this is not anything unexpected. It's just kind of letting you know what's changed about the nature of the fishery. The commercial fishermen will tell you that this has impacted their market because they don't have product as long as they used to. In 2016, the plan currently is to open the fishery just like we always do now on January 1. We don't really expect any fishing effort until April or maybe even into June with the same 60,000-pound quota that we've currently got in place. I will note, though, that quick reporting, when the quota was initially put into place in 2014, the quick reporting regulation was an e-reg, and we've not yet made that a permanent regulation. We have filed a CR-101, and that process is moving forward, so you will hear shortly about the need for quick reporting on a long-term basis. And so with that, I'll take any additional questions that you have.
Questions from the commission? Mr.
Kerper. Two questions in one, I guess. Do you feel, as a research scientist, that continually taking 88 to 95% of the smelt off that one North Beach area in Kamano Island is a sound practice, or should we look at some other aspects of how we might do that? And how would you judge the compliance rates between sport and commercial across the board?
Okay, so as to the sustainability of taking fish from that local area, many of the landowners in that area will tell you that, you know, there used to be smelt there, they used to fish on a regular basis, and they're simply not seeing them anymore. The interesting thing about that is that now they've been taking a sustained amount of about 100,000 pounds out of there for nearly two decades now, and has been very focused fishing in that one area. From the population information that we've got, if they are in fact one panmictic population, just a single population in all of Puget Sound, there's definitely some local depletion going on a seasonal basis because they're taking all those fish out of one area, but fish seem to be moving back in. Several times we've checked to see if spawning is still occurring on the local beaches where historically it's been documented. The problem that we have there is that that spawning has always been documented as presence-absence and maybe kind of a qualitative grade of light levels or low level, light, medium, heavy. We still see spawning in the area. Eggs are still being put on these beaches. So it's hard to really evaluate that. As I said, we're trying to do a full population abundance estimate for the entire sound. Once that's complete after this next year, we're hoping to have more information about the direct impacts of it. The other thing that we're doing right now is trying to get a good handle on the recreational fishery. We have this information for the commercial fishery because they have to file fish tickets. For the recreational fishery, we've only got these couple of localized estimates that I talked about earlier for Sinclair Inlet in the north end of Kameno. We've put in a project that will actually use drones if it's funded and if we can get the legislature to buy off on this. We'll use a drone to fly over and count people that are engaged in the fishing and then use kind of more traditional creeling techniques to actually contact the fishermen and look at, you know, how many fish are being taken per person and things like that. So we've got lots of efforts to try to address this. I guess the short answer is right now eggs appear to be being put on the gravel and fishing is taking place and people are still catching fish. So there are fish there. Your second question?
Compliance.
So the second issue that we've been dealing with, not just on the Kameno area, but that's been kind of a hot spot these last couple of years, is both commercial and recreational compliance. For the commercial fishery, we have had a couple of late reports. Like I said, we've had one or two missed reports that we had to go back and, you know, figure out when it was actually landed. But by and large, they're complying in those respects. We have had reports by landowners in the area that commercial fishermen are fishing at night, that they're fishing in areas they're not supposed to, at times they're not supposed to. With the enforcement efforts that we've had, we haven't been able to detect illegal fishing of that sort. There's also been issues with trespass and some other things like that the Island County Sheriff has been involved with, and I know that there are several pending court cases associated with that. For recreational compliance, we know that we have recreational fishermen in the area. We know that there are some times of year where they fish really heavily in that area. And we've had allegations of recreational fishermen essentially operating a commercial operation by taking far, far more than their 10-pound daily limit and taking it multiple times in the same day and for multiple days in a row. We've, again, had some enforcement efforts up there, and we've been coordinating with Deputy Chief Sensi on that. At this point, I know that they've handed out a few tickets for over-harvest or non-compliance with mesh regulations and things like that, but I've not seen any kind of gross over-harvest tickets or issues in that area. We do plan to have more enforcement effort there in coming years, though.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question about ecologic impacts. I hope I can articulate. So you were talking about its importance to the ecology, these coastal pelagic fish, in terms of being forage for many higher level animals, including some ESA species. Is there science that can directly correlate forage abundance with the status of those populations, or do we just not know enough about, you know, the population of these forage species to make that correlation? And then I guess sort of thinking, can that those populations then be used to sort of work backwards on the health of the, right, the coastal pelagic species?
So for Puget Sound right now, no, we really can't do that because we don't have a solid abundance estimate for the forage species. There's some circumstantial evidence, and primarily it comes from birds. And most of the work that's been done there shows that especially birds that don't forage far from a home area, especially when they're nesting, that only forage, say, you know, 10 miles or 20 miles out, as the abundance of forage fish in the area decreases, so do the populations of the birds.
Or puffins.
Yeah, and puffins are a big one.
Yeah.
And so there are several species of birds whose populations are doing more poorly now than they were historically. Whether that's directly correlated with forage fish abundance or maybe toxin load of the fish that they're eating or any number of other things, it's probably a mixture of those mm-hmm. things. That's part of why we're really trying to get a solid abundance estimate for these species. And the midwater trawling that we're going to do doesn't just focus on the smelt. It's going to focus on all midwater species.
Oh, okay.
So we should get information for smelt, herring, likely pollock and hake, and a variety of other marine fish species as well. So our hope is that after this next year, this full fishing cycle, that we'll have some good information on the population abundance out there.
Thank you.
Sounds good. Any questions?
All right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.